This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Our monthly gardening show starts now, and we await your questions and comments about how things are going in your neck of the woods. Our experts are standing by, so call us at 513-419-7100 or email your questions and comments to talk at WVXU.org. We are joined today on Zoom by Campbell County Extension Office Agent Sarah Stoles. Welcome back, Sarah.
Hey.
Hey. And we have Turner Farm Community Garden Program Director Peter Hottinger. Peter, welcome back to our show.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Again, that number is 513-419-7100, or feel free to email us at talk@wvxu.org. The emails are already rolling in. We're going to get to some phone calls here momentarily. And I'm so looking forward to this program today because it's nice to take a little break and just talk about the great outdoors. And always so grateful for the expert advice y'all are able to give our listeners. But first, we're just a couple of days away from Halloween. I know it's kind of a weird Halloween, and we don't know what trick-or-treating is going to look like in a lot of areas or if you're even going to participate, but I've got a pop quiz for both you, Sarah, and Peter. And the question is, what is the worst candy to get on Halloween? Sarah, let's start with you.
I think this is a question that was asked last year, and most of people's worst is my favorite. I really like those. They're wrapped in the black and the orange papers.
The peanut butter kisses. Sarah, you and I share this love of this despicable candy. Everyone hates this candy. I love the peanut butter kisses.
Yeah, so I like that. I don't really like the sour stuff. So if there's like Sour Patch Kids, or I don't like those things. So I just kind of move them on.
All right. I'm always a fan of grabbing those peanut butter kisses. But what do you think is so you don't like the sour ones, but you do like the peanut butter kisses. And Peter, same to you. What's the best? What's the worst?
Well, my best, because it always seems seasonal, is candy corn. The other thing, I guess the things I don't like are things that stick in your teeth and pull out your fillings, like juju beans or those all-day suckers.
Okay, that's fair. So I bring these up because CandyStore.com released its survey of 20,000 respondents and listed the top 10 best and worst. I have to say that something must be wrong with this particular panel because the worst is candy corn, according to this survey. And the second worst are those peanut butter kisses that Sarah and I love. So we managed to love the ones that everyone else hates the most. The best, according to 20,000 respondents, in order, number 3, Snickers, number 2, M&M's, and number 1, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. So I imagine those are the ones that parents are looking forward to grabbing out of those trick-or-treat bins as we go around. But here we are. The last week of October, heading into November, fall is definitely here. It's definitely cooled off outside. At this point in the year, as we always begin this show, Sarah, what should people be doing as far as the great outdoors are concerned around their homes?
Yeah, so you should be wrapping up on mowing. There's a lot of leaf collection. So we've talked about this many of times. It's a great opportunity to put them in your compost, to mulch with them. So leaf collection is great. So just really sanitizing, what we call it, your garden. So getting out all dead debris, like your tomatoes. Each week, I'm like, oh, one more week for the tomatoes, one more week. And so I think this week is going to be the last week of the tomatoes. I'll probably take them out on Friday. So, cause some disease can overwinter on foliage, and we don't want that. We want to try to prevent any further spread. So this is a good time to do that, cleaning your tools, sharpening your tools. Of course, planting bulbs, we're going to be doing that on Friday as well. Lawn fertilization. So there's all kinds of good stuff that you can be doing. There's no reason for you to be bored outside, especially with everything going on. There's still plenty to do. Nurseries are stocking up with plants because fall is also a great time to plant trees. So the list goes on. This is a great time.
And Peter, same question for you. I imagine you agree with a lot of what Sarah said, but anything else?
Yeah, of course. I mean, one of the things too is to creatively think about what you can do with some of the, you know, things that take place in the fall, like your yard is full of leaves. You know, you can, a lot of people rake them up, put them in the bags and put them out for be picked up by the city, but you can also take those leaves and, you know, you can't just mow over them with a mulching lawnmower and then rake them into a pile and use those as a mulch for your perennial flowers and different perennial crops. So that's some things to kind of think about is kind of trying to think a little bit outside the box in terms of how can you take something that is you think is kind of a deficit and turn it into an asset. Some of us have already, for overwintering your vegetable gardens, have already put in your cover crops. Unfortunately, it's getting a little late now. So really, your only option if you're going to do a cover crop right now would be winter or cereal rye. That could still be planted because it will germinate even down in the, you know, upper 30s, lower 40s. And so it'll still germinate and grow during the summer. And that's a good ground cover.
All right. Again, we're joined by Sarah Stolz and Peter Huttinger for the full hour as we take your questions and comments about gardening, landscaping, trees, bushes, flowers, what worked, what didn't this year, and what are your goals for next year? 513-419-7100 is the number to call or email talk@wvxu.org. We'll go to the phones now. We have Monica on the line. Hi, Monica. What's your question or comment?
Hi, everybody. So I thought if I just stopped mowing in a certain area, it would turn into a beautiful meadow, which, of course, didn't happen. So the question, I have some beautiful tall grass that the deer sleep in. But my question is, like, indigenous plantings for to create a nice meadow for in one area to prevent the sliding and the I can't even think of the word right now. And then in another area more for, like, bees and butterflies and to draw kind of nature to the area. Like, is there anything I can do now to start for next year as far as research, resources, and planting?
All right, Monica, I'm going to place you on hold and let our panel take an answer for that one. So Sarah or Peter, for Monica looking to turn part of her land into a meadow, should she plant or let it go naturally?
So there are some things that you could be doing. Excuse me. It sounds like maybe erosion was the word that you were looking for. It sounds like you want to prevent your soil from moving, which is great. There are quite a few things that you can plant. Some of the native grasses, like blue stems, for example, most of those ornamental grasses are best to be planted in the spring, though we just planted some and we're going to see, you know, how that's going to thrive. Ideally, by textbook, those types of grasses would be best in the spring. We have a wonderful display of, you know, attracting our monarchs, attracting the pollinators into the garden. One of my definitely favorites, and you guys have heard this before, is called mountain mint. It's a native. It is not invasive, though it is aggressive. So that I've put that personally in my landscape on a hillside, and it has done well and helps with erosion and movement of mulch or any other types of organic matter that you have. So there is plenty to be done and planted at this time, and there's definitely lots of information through Extension and also through the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanic Gardens. They have great information as well. So if you want to send me an email, also if you have capability of taking a picture and also knowing your sun exposure is helpful as well, sun shade, that will help choose plants. But Peter, do you have any ideas?
Well, I mean, one of the things you can do is because you do have your, you know, the existing grass and stuff there, you could tarp the area to kind of kill the existing grasses. I mean, and usually that's best done earlier in the year, like particularly in summer where it'll solarize. But you could possibly think about ways to kind of open up the soil with a shallow tilling and then cover it for a while so that, or even if you were to heavy mulch it, then you can proceed with doing a mix, sowing a sort of a wildflower mix seed mixture initially in the spring, and then see what germinates in the, do the planting in this late fall and then see what comes up in the spring and then infill there. But Sarah also mentioned the zoo has an excellent pollinator gardens education program on their website. And I would definitely check that out because they have a lot of really good recommendations on that.
There you go, Monica. Does that help?
Cool. Thank you so much.
All right, Monica, thank you so much for calling in. 513-419-7100 is the number to call. We've got Don up next. Hi, Don. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I have put in a raised patio and a walkway to it that's raised up. And so I've got maybe 75 or 100 square feet of new soil that I've filled. And I wonder how late I can see if I can plant grass there.
All right, Don, we'll hang up and let our panel answer that question. So Don wants to know, he's got about 75 or 100 square feet of new soil and wants to know how late in the season can grass be planted.
And so this is a great time to put seed down. So if it's bare soil, you definitely want to put something down. I never want to hear about bare soil. So you can actually broadcast. You know, since there's nothing there, you don't have, and I say that because if you have weeds or, you know, some turf there, you would want to use a split seeder. So it actually gets that seed to soil contact. But if you have bare soil, you can just, you know, broadcast either with your hand or there are those mechanisms that you put the seed in and spread it there. So just put that on, make sure you water it. You may want to put down some straw just to keep the birds away. So, you know, for the soil, for the seed to germinate, the soil temperature needs to be 55 degrees consistently for 5 to 7 days. And we are still within that range. Now, atmospheric temperature can drop down a little bit, but our soil temperature doesn't fluctuate that quickly. So we're still good with that. I would recommend getting that down, especially now we've had great temperature and Mother Nature providing the rain. So get that down if you can today. It's supposed to rain tomorrow. And you may need to fill in a few areas this early spring after the danger of frost and freeze. So you could do that. But get it down. And you should be able to do one mow before the frost.
There you go, Don. Good luck with that new grass. Hope it works out for you. Want to let you know you can
and
also...
You know, there's another little trick you can do when you're planting this time of year, which most people think is really kind of the best time. But if you can put in like 10-15% annual rye or cereal rye, or what some people call winter rye, and it's used also as an agricultural cover crop. But if you sow that with your seeds now, they can germinate down to a very low temperature, and that'll actually fill in and to a little bit, and then hold everything in place. And then when you mow in the spring, you know, it'll just die back from repeated mowings. But early on, it'll establish roots and help aerate the soil.
You can call 513-419-7100 to join our conversation or email talk@wvxu.org. We got an email here from a listener named, forgive me if I mispronounce this, it's Tana Weingartner. It's our own Tana Weingartner. And she wants to know, what are the best ways to prepare plants to bring them indoors for the winter? What can you spray them with, etc., to ensure the bugs stay outside? Can we help Ms. Tana?
Yeah, we can definitely help with that. So I start with tropical, I guess all plants. A lot of times when people say they're indoor plants, they're probably talking about their tropicals and maybe some herbs that they're going to transition indoors. So I always like to give them a really nice soak with the hose outside. Make sure you look underneath the leaves, cut any dead, diseased areas, cut any flower buds off, because your idea is not to have them bloom much, if at all. You just kind of are letting them thrive in the winter months. There are some things that you can apply, such as horticulture soaps. I would strongly discourage from using any home remedies, because liquid soap that you use on your dishes sometimes can cause worse issues, because they can really burn foliage tissue. So just be careful with that. There are other things to consider: drainage of your plants. You want to make sure that you put a saucer or something underneath there. The indoor air temperature, you want to make sure to keep it away from direct heat source. If you put it in a window, so I have this issue with my office window here, I have a breeze coming in. So making sure that there's a few other things to consider, but definitely as far as your particular question, insects, millibugs, aphids, and scale are the big ones that really cause an issue, but also can be easily diagnosed, one, and two, controlled by either taking them in with the hose and kind of massaging those leaves off, and also using a labeled horticulture soap, and follow those labeled directions.
There you go, Tana. We'll look forward to seeing those plants at our next Microsoft Teams meeting. So show us how beautiful they are in the coming days. Let's go back to the phones now. We have LaDawn on the line. Hi, LaDawn. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I have a geranium out front that just does not want to die. It just wants to live. It's still blooming. Since I can't grow a mum, how much more time will I get with my geranium?
All right, I'm going to place you on hold, LaDawn. Hang on, and we'll let Peter or Sarah answer that question. How long does LaDawn have with this geranium?
Well, you know, with the geraniums, I mean, they're not going to be cold tolerant, but they will hang on like many plants will to the last minute. The trick is if you might want to bring it in earlier than later, because if you wait and it gets a heavy frost and dies, then you're sunk, so to speak. So I would say I would exercise caution here before, and to bring it in sooner as opposed to later.
There you go, LaDawn. Sounds like you got a little bit of work ahead of you, and good luck. I'm glad it's still blooming for you. Thanks for listening, and thanks for the call. And 513-419-7100 is the number to call if you'd like to participate. You can also email talk@wvxu.org. We've got an email from Nasrin, who says, I received my shipment of spring bulbs on October 20th. I would like to know if planting these bulbs late October or early November is not too late. What do you say, Sarah or Peter?
Well, we just got ours in yesterday, and we're planting ours on Friday. So if that helps you, I think with these temperatures that are staying warmer and these damp soils that we've been having, it's easy to get in the soil and to plant. Just be cautious not to work in the soil when it's raining, because we can cause further compaction. But we've planted all the way, the beginning of November. It's when, as soon as we get bulbs, we plant. And I believe the Zoo and Botanic Gardens in Cincinnati, they've been planting bulbs too. I've been following them on Instagram, and I see their staff and volunteers hard at work. So
there you go, Nasrin. Sounds like it's not too late. Good luck with those spring bulbs. We'll go back to the phones now. We have Tim on the line. Hi, Tim. What's your question or comment?
Hi. First, let me say I really enjoy your show. I'm glad that you're here. First time calling.
Thank you.
So last year, I put in a border. I've got some black-eyed Susans and some white-eyed Susans. I don't think that's the name, but that's what they look like. I've got some catmint. And we didn't do anything last year because everything was new and it was, pretty sparse looking. And we were just hoping it came back this year, but it came back in a great way. So now I'm wondering if... for the preparation in the fall, do I cut everything down to the ground or just let it stay large, or what do I do with it?
All right, Tim, I'm going to place you on hold and we'll turn it over to Peter. If you can help out with these black-eyed Susans, does Tim want to cut them all the way down to the ground?
Yeah, I mean, black-eyed Susans are actually one of my favorite perennials. Yeah, what I usually do is that after the stalks have completely died back, I will cut them back to, maybe an inch stubble, of a little bit less over the ground. And then you can mulch them with chopped up leaves or straw or pine fines, whatever kind of makes sense into your landscaping. Now, some people will take them and just cut them off. And then if they're trying to encourage a large area of black-eyed Susans, actually mulch the ground with the actual stalks of the flowers. And that's sort of a permaculture trick. So it just, a lot of that depends on, what your goal is aesthetically and how you want your garden to look over the winter.
And Sarah, it sounds like Tim referenced something he called white-eyed Susans, but wasn't exactly sure if that was correct. Any idea what he might have been talking about?
And they might be a Shasta daisy of some sort. But to add on to what Peter said, you know, I also like the way that those stalks look in the winter. It gives some winter interest. It also provides some food and habitat for beneficial insects as well as birds. So I love my mountain mint. I believe I heard the caller say or reference mountain mint. I think it adds great texture into the winter landscape. So I will eventually cut it down, but I keep mine up all the way past the holidays to the first of the year. But it is a different aesthetic look to your landscape. To me, there's no rules there. I just like the way of the different textures.
So, Tim, did that help?
I think I will do exactly that and just leave it and see what it looks like this year.
All right. Thank you. Well, we'll talk to you again soon, I hope. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks for the call, Tim. We appreciate it. 513-419-7100 is the number to call. Email us at talk@wvxu.org. We've got more callers and more emails to get to. Plus, we want to tell you a little bit about a bug that Sarah says the Campbell County Extension Office has been getting a lot of calls about recently. It's called the crane fly. We'll talk about that next on The Gardening Show. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue now with our monthly gardening show, and we are joined on Zoom today by Campbell County Extension Office Agent Sarah Stoles. Hi, Sarah.
Howdy.
Howdy. And we have Turner Farm Community Garden Program Director Peter Huttinger with us also. Peter, thank you for being with us.
Hello. Thank you.
The number is 513-419-7100 if you'd like to talk to us. Or you can email us, talk@wvxu.org. We've got some emails to get to and some callers to get to momentarily. But Sarah, before we went on air, you brought to my attention that there's a certain insect that is driving a lot of people to inquire at the Campbell County Extension Office about what's going on with it. It's called the crane fly?
Yeah, crane fly. And we posted something up. We kept on getting all these phone calls and emails, and we posted on our social media. And I just want to say we had over 220,000 response and shared of this insect, even pretty flowers that we've posted with. This crane fly has gotten more attention than anything else we've ever posted on social media. So it is an insect that has been around. It's not the first time, you know, this. There are many other different species in Kentucky, in the greater Cincinnati, and it actually is a beneficial insect. It's a decomposer. So it's feeding on things in your lawn, you know, decomposing organic matter. So they're not biting insects. Some people may mistaken them for mosquitoes. They are not mosquitoes. Their life cycle is not very long. So they are only going to live for about 2 days, and then a new generation will come about. So once here, I've seen them, their population starting to dwindle, but we find them a lot of times in the lawn, and as soon as you walk out there, they're just fluttering everywhere, and they're not very smart and good flyers. So a lot of times they're flying in your face. And yes, I have had a few instances where they enter into my mouth and blah, but they're not harmful. Some folks may also mistaken them as daddy long leggers. Again, they're not, they're not going to eat or harm people. They're just out there feeding on water. That's where they're actually their preferred habitat is, so moist areas. And that's where they will start their life cycle, is on stream banks or in areas where it holds a lot of moisture. And so their larval stage begins in those environments.
I'm looking at an image of one of these crane flies. And Sarah, mm-hmm. I got to say, they do look a little scary. I'm a bit of a wuss. We've established that on many episodes of the gardening show, but I would use the blowtorch on one of these, I think, just to make sure that it was dead, dead, dead. But you're saying there's nothing
never.
To be scared of here, right?
No. Again, they're a beneficial insect. They may start coming, you know, they may try to find their way into your home by following you. Again, they're not great flyers, but they're not going to survive in the home. They're not going to survive in your shed or anything. They're very short-lived insects. There's no means to treat them, if you will. The only thing, if you have an area in your landscape that holds in a lot of rainfall, you may want to see if you can help with that drainage to decrease their population. Very similar to mosquitoes. They like that water. But again, they are not a mosquito, but commonly mistaken for mosquitoes.
All right, that's what you need to know about the crane fly. So no need to worry at all, even if your name is Michael Monks. Just walk on by and try not to let them in your mouth, apparently. They could be a little sour. We don't like those this time of year. Let's go back to the phones
now
and get some questions. 513-419-7100. We've got Paul. Hi, Paul. What's your question or comment?
First, thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a red oak seedling that is trying to survive. And I think for the first 5 or 6 years of its life in the springtime, it could only best be described as sickly. I had a red oak tree that was killed by that really terrible hard frost about 10 or 15 years ago. And then about 2 years after that, this seedling appeared. And I would like to do something to help it survive next year. I have put a cage around it to protect it from deer. All summer, I watered it with, every time I would clean out the bird bath, I would water it with the bird bath water, which it seems to really like. But what can I do now to help it survive next year?
All right, Paul, I'm going to place you on hold, and we'll see if Peter can help you out with this red oak seedling. He wants it to survive another year, Peter.
Well, I think what you can do is, I mean, you know, keeping up with watering it, not, you know, because the drought conditions can really hurt, you know, young seedlings. But one thing you could do is just the mulch around the tree. One thing I'd be kind of curious about is how tall the tree is at this point. But if it's a seedling that just came up and you don't really know what the variety is, that can be either a good thing or a bad thing. So, I mean, if you're really concerned with having a tree that'll establish itself well and be healthy in the long term, you may want to consider purchasing an older tree from a nursery that of a variety that's suitable for our climate zone.
Okay.
But mulching around it, not to girdle the trunk, but just around it will help protect roots during the winter freezes.
Paul, is that helpful?
Okay, that is. I'll try doing that. Thank you very much.
Paul, thanks so much for the call. We do appreciate it. 513-419-7100 is the number to call. You can also email talk at wvxu.org. We got an email from Paula in Germantown who writes a question about fall mums. She says, I buy them and plant them every year, and they come up in the spring. The problem is that when they bloom in fall, they are leggy and bent over from the weight of the blooms. They don't have the compact, mounded shape that they did when I planted them. What can I do to fix this? Sarah, can we help Paula and her mums?
Yeah, so when we buy these mums, a lot of times they are advertised as hardy mums. So unfortunately, when they start coming out into the nursery, it's September, October, and ideally we would want to get them in the ground way before we see them in the, to keep them as a perennial. So if possible, get them in as soon as possible. And then after they are finished blooming, you want to cut those off and then you really want to mulch those in. You may even also, if they start to push out some growth and maybe even flowers in the spring, you want to cut those off. Pruning helps with compacted growth and it prevents any of that legginess. So keep that in mind. You may lose some here or there if we get really cold freezing temperatures, which we have not had as long as you can mulch those in really well, leaves would be great.
Okay, Paula, good luck with those mums. Mums are so beautiful this time of year. It's so hard not to walk out of like the grocery store with a whole bunch of them. They are lovely, and tis the season indeed. I want to let you all know, Sarah and Peter, we got an email from Michelle about a tree, and I did forward that to your inboxes. So if you haven't had a chance to look at that, if you can pull up your inboxes, there are some images. So we'll get to that.
Yeah, I saw that.
Oh, you've got it. Okay, cool. Well, let's go to that one. Michelle wrote in with some images with a curiosity question. She writes, my neighborhood was built in the 70s, and every yard has maple trees, some soft and some hard. Each year, I await the turning of the leaves with hope that maybe this year mine will change. It doesn't. Neighbors have turned beautiful oranges and reds and a few yellow. Many have already dropped almost all, but mine, green and full. Can you please explain? Can we explain this, Peter?
Well, my understanding is that, you know, not all varieties of maple trees necessarily turn these beautiful reds. Like the sugar maple is one that, you know, people tap for maple syrup, but also it's one that turns a color. But like, for instance, the silver maple, or there's another variety called the Norway maple, these trees do not get the kind of color that we really want for this, you know, our beautiful fall foliage. So that's just my guess of what the situation is without knowing the exact species of that tree or the variety of that tree. It's kind of hard to say, but that's my guess. I don't know. Sarah, what do you think?
That's exactly what I was going to say. Not sure if she got this from a little seedling. Sometimes with tree giveaways, for example, they may not specify which one. When I say cultivar, for example, like it may say red sunset, which is a good description because that's going to give you a red fall color and some orangey color as well. So I would say it's just the variety cultivar that you have.
Well, it sounds like, Michelle, you've got to learn to live with the beauty of the green maple while enjoying your neighbor's view from your own porch. Good luck with that. We do appreciate you sending in the email. We got an email from Elizabeth. When is the best time to trim back my lilac bushes and knock out rose bushes? Sarah?
Lilac, you said? I want to make sure I get that.
She
lilac
wants to
and rose bushes?
No, the best time to trim back my lilac bushes and knock out rose bushes.
Okay. So I that was very important to know because it's all about timing of bloom. So a lot of our, this is a general rule of thumb, anything that blooms before June 1st, you want to prune right after it flowers. So things even like red buds, for example, or dogwoods, lilacs fit into that as well. So if you prune now, which a lot of our other perennials and flowering trees and shrubs are of that rule, you're going to be cutting off all those flower buds, okay? So, again, there are always exceptions to rules. So your lilac is a spring bloomer. Now, there are some varieties that are, you know, I think it's Miss Kim that is a dwarf, and it's also supposed to be a continual bloomer. That means that it blooms on new wood and old wood. So you can prune at any time of year. And similar to what we discussed earlier, I like to keep those up as long as possible to add some texture into the landscape. Another thing that happens a lot of times with lilacs that I've found that causes reduction in bloom is insect damage by a lilac borer. And I would check on the trunk of the tree or the shrub, depending upon how you have it growing, and see if there's any cracking. Feel free to send me pictures of that because that may, if a little bore is getting in there, that's really going to cause stress to the plant and overall reduce flowering. As far as rose bushes, or I'm going to assume she's talking about knockouts with that little horticulture pun that you said there, Michael.
Oh, is that like a type of rose bush, a knockout
yes,
rose? Oh,
it is.
I'm like, how does she literally punch a bush in the face because it looked at her wrong?
Oh, no. That really is one, Michael. There is so much that you still have to learn, so we're just going to have to keep doing these shows. you know?
I love this show, but I am generally completely clueless during the full hour. That's I think it's part of the enjoyment, hopefully, for our listeners.
Well, you play it off very well. So with these knockouts, they are continual bloomers as well. So they will bloom on new and new wood and old wood. So again, you can chop them down 2 to 3 times a year and it doesn't matter. They are very forgiving. I have neighbors that cut them all the way back about 18 inches above the ground. And then I also have some that do nothing with them. So it's really whatever preference you want. Similar to what I said previously, if you want that really compact growth, you want to prune them more regularly, maybe once a year or twice a year. So it's just whatever your preference is. Yeah. And then discard any of that. Cause a lot of times, especially our roses, they can, harbor disease like black spot, and we don't want to use those as a mulch, and plus they're thorns anyways. But, yeah, I hope that answers your question.
All right, Elizabeth, good luck with that. Thank you so much for writing in and teaching me about knockout rose bushes. I'm going to have to look those up a little bit later.
Michael, there's one thing I'll add about the knockout roses. I mean, a lot of the people I know that have them, they feel pretty strongly about not pruning, cutting them back this time of year in the fall, but the wait to early spring, because that'll generate new growth and a new batch of blooms. But there is some concern with cutting them back this type of year that you can run into some problems with fungal diseases on those new fresh cuts. I mean, I haven't experienced that personally, but a couple of people I know have recommended that. But also, I just want to follow up with what Sarah said about disposing of those cuttings and not mulching over composting them. You know, that's I think it's really, really important to do with any rose bush.
Mm-hmm. All right, Peter, I appreciate that. And I think Beth probably will too. 513-419-7100. We've got lines open in case you'd like to call in and join our conversation live with your questions about your gardens, your landscaping, what worked for you this year, what stumped you this year, and what might you like to try next year? You can get some advice from Sarah and Peter. They are standing by. You can also email talk@wvxu.org. We've got an email from Jill. She writes, "The deer had a significant tussle in my yard. The ground is just a field of divots in a 20 by 20 foot area. None of the sod remains in place. What is the best way to restore my lawn?" Well, it sounds like Jill could open up a deer wrestling operation that could potentially draw some crowds and generate some revenue. But barring that opportunity, Sarah or Peter, what should she do here?
So if I'm understanding correctly, it's just a lot of deer activity in her lawn. Is that correct, Michael?
That's what it sounds like. She referred to it as a tussle.
Yeah. So a lot of times we are, you know, either in our own landscape, our neighbor's landscape, we have a lot of acorns being dropped down on the ground and in our lawn. So I've seen a lot of deer activity as well as squirrel, and they are the squirrel are burying the acorns, and then the deer are coming and finding them and eating them. So if we're concerned about our lawn and how that's going to, I guess, survive through all of this, just, you know, either going through and kind of making sure that it gets those roots, get that soil contact again, Mother Nature providing this rain, that's going to push everything back down. If it's really bad, you may want to consider putting some seed down. But really just the rain, it sounds like we're going to get quite a bit of rain tomorrow. That should really help. Peter, I don't know if you have any other suggestions.
No, I agree with everything you said. I mean, it would be if you kind of try and rake it out and smooth it out some, and then if there's bald spots, I would definitely, that this is a good time of year to broadcast some seed.
And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue now with our gardening show, and we are joined by our experts on Zoom, Campbell County Extension Office Agent Sarah Stoles and Turner Farm Community Garden Program Director Peter Huttinger. And as you know, Sarah and Peter, at this point in the show where we are just about out of time, we have to enter the lightning round. And that means we want to answer these questions as quickly as possible so that we can get the last ones in. We do have a few callers on the line, and all of a sudden during that break, we got a ton of emails. So we're going to try to whip through some of those now. We got an email from Laura, who writes, "My cold greenhouse was infested with whitefly this summer. What can I do this winter to rid them for next year? Who wants to take that question about whitefly in the greenhouse?
Peter, do you have more experience with greenhouse?
Well, some. I have other colleagues at Turner Farm that can give a more exacting answer to that. So what I would recommend, my email is peter@turnerfarm.org. So you can contact me and I can put you in contact with more specific information. But generally, you know, a lot of times what you can do, there are insecticides that you can, that are organically certified, that you can spray in there. But if the question I have is that usually they don't always overwinter in the greenhouse, but you do want to take some kind of precaution. And also if you're, I don't know how large your greenhouse is, if it's a small one in your home, one thing you can do is that, you know, a lot of these insect pests will lay eggs in existing soil that's in the greenhouse, or and those eggs can overwinter. And so one thing I would do is recommend sort of removing everything from the greenhouse, your planting trays and stuff like that, to, you know, to sanitize those with a light bleach solution, like a 5% ratio to water of bleach to clean all your trays and things, and then dispose of the soil itself, add it to your outdoor compost bin. And so that's the basic primary thing I would recommend, is, you know, sanitation and cleaning the greenhouse.
Good luck, Laura.
One other thing. Oh,
please.
Can I add one more thing,
go
Michael?
Ahead, Sarah. Mm-hmm.
So you can find them at box stores and your nurseries and, of course, in catalogs, but they're called sticky traps. And you may, as you're going through your greenhouse, you may find areas or zones that are a greater population, or plants that are, I guess, are the favorite of this pest. And so you can put these sticky traps that aren't, it helps you figure out where and location. So maybe you can figure out exactly, so you're not having to treat maybe the whole area, you know, the whole greenhouse, but maybe you can kind of section it off and really focus on there, maybe get rid of the worst of the plants. So again, they're also very good with other insect pests as well.
Seems like we used up a lot of time when we could have just said blowtorch. All right, Laura, you can reach out to Turner Farm there, as Peter said, and perhaps one of the other guys there would be able to give you a more elaborate answer if you feel like you need that. But we always thank Peter and Sarah for their expertise. And Laura, thank you so much for taking the time to write in. We'll get some quick phone calls in now. Mary, what's your question or comment?
Yes, I have two quick questions. One is, we have hazelnut bushes in our community garden that are growing like wild. What is the correct time of year to prune those back, or should we be dividing them?
Okay, and you have another question also?
Yeah, the other question is hydrangea bushes that are planted on the northeast side of my house and have always bloomed beautifully until the last couple years, no blooms. I'm wondering if I prune them at the wrong time and if I can revive the blooming.
Okay, so when to prune the hazelnuts and why are your hydrangeas no longer blooming? Those are your questions?
That's it.
Thank All right, you. Mary, thank you so much for calling. We do appreciate you listening, and we'll turn it over to Sarah and Peter on that. Let's take the hazelnut question first. When is it time to prune those things?
You want to do that while the shrub or tree is, depending on the variety, is in dormant. So you want to do that early spring, or, you know, no sooner than March, because that'll not only give you an opportunity to thin them, but also when you cut it, it stimulates growth. And it'll help increase the production of the nuts. One question I always kind of wonder is, I have a number of these at home, and I have a lot of trouble beating the squirrels to them. So our harvest is very, very, very light.
All right. Well, thank you so much for the call, Mary. We do appreciate that. Oh, wait, you've got another question, the hydrangeas. Maybe Sarah can help us with this. They're no longer blooming. Any idea what might have happened to these things?
Yeah, so sometimes, again, it's the variety that you may have. The most common one is the microphylla. It has the bigger leaf. And so you need to prune that right after it blooms. If you're not sure which one you have, you can send me a picture of what the bloom and the flower looks like, and I may be able to tell. But when in doubt, I let it be. I don't do anything. You could use a slow-release fertilizer that also is an acidifier for hydrangeas to help. You know, especially with the microphylla species, that will depend on the bloom color. And just as a side fact, blue is for acidic and the pinks are for alkaline soils. So if that really, you can switch that up depending upon if you add sulfur or lime to your soil. So, I would say let it go. And if it blooms next year, you know that you have one that blooms on last year's growth and you want to wait to prune that until after it flowers, just like I said, with like the red bud. And I forget what the other lady said, all her lilacs. So,
okay. Good luck, Mary. Thanks so much for the call. And we'll go now to Paul. Hi, Paul. What's your question or comment?
Hi. Yes, we've had moles in our backyard this season. So I'm just wondering if there's anything we can do to repair the yard, try and take care of those mounds, and then in the future, what we can do to deter them from coming back.
All right, Paul, I appreciate the call. And we do get this a lot, right? Like people get moles in their yard, and we have a variety of suggestions on how to deal with it. I think when we have Joshua Jones on, he always recommends somehow. Wait, our producer, Selena, heard the word mold. I thought that we heard moles from that caller. What did you all hear? I've let him go.
Mole, M-O-L-E.
I thought it was mole, M-O-L-E, but Selena, our producer, heard mold, M-O-L-D. Is mold in a yard a thing? It had to be mold, I mean, right? Listen, look, it's got to be mole, M-O-L-E, right?
Correct. I would say it's that. I say we go with that. Peter, do you have any insight to the mold?
Well, because we have the cicada big crop coming up or infestation, there's going to be a lot of larvae. So the moles are going to be particularly active going around eating grubs. So they are doing a kind of service
yeah.
for us, and they're also aerating the soil.
Two cheers for
but
the moles.
All you can really do is to compact the soil with using a soil compactor. And there's, outside of that, it's a very difficult thing. But I do know that it's, you know, at some point you can you concerns about twisting your ankle and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've only got a minute left and have like 20 emails. So to Nate, Joni, Terrence, Kevin, Lucy, Michelle, Janice, Laura, Sarah, Drew, Celeste, all of you who have written us, we're so grateful to your emails. I'm sorry we can't get to them. I can probably get one more in from Anne, who writes, I'm wondering the best way to store seeds over the winter from this year's harvest, and also when is an ideal time to start planting seeds for Cincinnati's weather next year. 30 seconds.
Well, you can store the seeds after they're completely dry in your refrigerator and a cool, dry place out of direct sunlight. And the planting of seeds for the spring crops varies on the varieties that you grow. So they could be as early as February and as late as, April. If you email me at peter@turnerfarm.org, I have a seed viability and seed starting chart that PDF I can email you that kind of gives you some more concrete dates.
Okay, so Sarah and Peter, if you are so kind, I'm going to forward some of these emails to you all. We always appreciate the time that you give us, and hopefully if you can find some time, you'll respond to our listeners. I'll send them to both of you so you can maybe coordinate on who responds. We're so grateful for the time you give us each month, and I know our listeners are big fans, so they'd appreciate. So if you did email us and we didn't get to you, I'm going to forward these on, and hopefully you'll get a response. Sarah Stoles from the Campbell County Extension Office and Peter Huttinger from Turner Farm. Thanks to both of you for being with us today. Happy Halloween.
Great to be here.
All right. Thank you.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.